Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and checking on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
I'm fantastic, Carlos. Hey, a lot of golf last weekend. Charlie Hoffman holed a putt on the 72nd hole to win in San Antonio. Michael Allen did the same thing at the Legends. And Japan's Haru Nomura won by four shots at the LPGA Tour Swinging Skirts Championship. Plus, we may be seeing Tiger Woods on a golf course near you soon. We've got a lot of golf to talk about, so let's go.
We have so much that we might have need more time than the one we have allowed, but we'll see how we can make it. But anyway, let's start right away like we always do with the weekend backspin, where we recap the weekend's action on the major tours. And I'm going to start with the PGA Tour, where a collective stumble there by the final group during Sunday's final round at the Valero Texas Open set the stage for a duel between Charlie Hoffman and Patrick Reed down the stretch at the TPC San Antonio. On the strength of a clutch birdie to end his round of 3-under-69, Hoffman posted 12-under par overall to beat Patrick Reed by one stroke. Hoffman had to dig deep in what was a tricky up and down from the back bunker to win. He has seemingly been in contention every week, and the emotion poured out when the final punt went in. That fist pump, it was great just to see him celebrate. Golf Channel's Justin Ray, he noted that Charlie Hoffman is 43 under at TPC San Antonio, Valero Texas Open since 2010. That is 29 shots better than anyone else in that span. That is how much Hoffman has owned the TPC San Antonio. And now, finally, he has some hardware to show for it. Overnight leader Ricky Barnes, former world number one Luke Donald, and 2011 Texas Open champion Brendan Steele all failed to break par in an underwhelming showing from the last trio off the first tee on Sunday. Donald, he finished second last week at the RBC Heritage, where he played in the final group just as he did at the Valero Texas Open. His game seems to be sort of getting back to its best, and he'll take some pride from being disappointed with that T13 finish. But a strong ball striking day helped Hoffman to the win. He hit 10 of 14 fairways and 14 of 18 greens in regulation. In recent weeks, it was Hoffman who couldn't close the deal, but he was 200 of 201 players in the final round scoring entering that Sunday. Played the last holes in 3-under to win by one. That is clutch. Now, Reed is the one who's in danger of being slapped with that scrutiny following his PGA Tour best 8 top 10 finish of the season without a win. As for other storylines to emerge there from San Antonio, other than Hoffman's fourth career Tour win, perhaps the most notable was the continued steady play of Brandon Grace. You know, that South African just won the RBC Heritage for his maiden stateside triumph last week, but took a while to get going at the Valero Texas Open. Grace, nevertheless, he bounced back by going 8-under par on the weekend, and he missed realistically a birdie bid at number 16 and 18th on Sunday to settle for a 67. It's worth keeping a steady eye on him. I mean, he's only 27, has 7 European Tour wins on his resume, and only continues to climb the world golf hierarchy. The next couple of weeks on the PGA Tour set up a compelling precursor to what's going to be the Players' Championship. First on the slate is the Zurich Classic of New Orleans beginning on Monday, which should generate considerable buzz with the 2013 U.S. Open winner Justin Rose as the defending champion. And that, Fred, will be followed by the Wells Fargo Championship starting May 5th, where superstar Rory McIlroy has committed to defend at the site of his first PGA Tour win.
Yeah, there was a lot of action there in Texas this week. That's a pretty good golf course. It brings out some good play, and it requires good shots into those greens. And, you know, although Reed and Hoffman, you know, had a lot of pressure on them coming down the stretch on Sunday, I think the guy maybe feeling the most heat had to be Martin Piller, who had, you know, he ended up with a T4 finish, and he cashed a nice check of $233,000, but his wife beat him this weekend, Carlos. She finished T3 in the swinging skirts, earning $117,000. So, you know, in my house, Carlos, that would mean that Jarena really made about $350,000, because I, you know, I just get lunch money for the week. So, hey, let's talk about the ladies. Haroon Nomura won her second event of the year last week at the Swinging Skirts. She also won in the Australian Open back in February. On a very windy day by the bay on Lake Merced Golf Course in San Francisco, Nomura posted a final round 73 and collected $300,000 for the win. She bested Leanne Pace from South Africa by four shots, and we've had Leanne on the show before. Defending champ Lydia Ko shot 73-75 on the weekend and fell to T6. Carlos, it's not all sweetness and flowers on the LPGA Tour. Holly Clybourne from England, who we have also had on the show, is in her rookie season on the LPGA Tour and had a very tough week in San Francisco. First, her caddy broke her ankle and is lost for several weeks. She also missed the cut, and her rental car was broken into. Thieves made off with her luggage and passport, so she couldn't fly out of San Francisco and missed her flight. It took her an extra day to visit the English consulate and get a replacement passport so she could fly back to England. Clybourne has made 30,000 six starts on her rookie year in the LPGA Tour. Welcome to big-time world of golf. Numbers to know, Carlos. Number two, Haroon Nomura became the first Japanese player to win twice in 1 year on the LPGA Tour since Ai Miyazato in 2012. Three, Haroon Nomura became the third player to win multiple events in 2016, joining Lydia Ko and Hana Yang. Six, the number of top 10 finishes for Lydia Ko in 2016. And nine, Brooke Henderson extended her streak of consecutive top 10 finishes this week with a T6 finish. Other notes from last weekend, Michelle Wee withdrew after 15 holes in the final round, citing neck spasms. With her T3 finish, Jarena Piller moved up to 18th in Rolex rankings, dropping Brittany Lincecum off Team USA and Jarena Piller on the four-player team for the 2016 UL International Crown, and I'm sure that also has an effect for the Olympic team. I got one more number for you, Carlos, 19. Lydia Ko turned 19 on Sunday, only one more year remaining as a teenager. Hope she makes the best use of it. Her previous teenage years haven't been too snotty thus far. Just a few highlights for you. Won two LPGA Tour events while still an amateur. Became the world number one before she turned 18. Youngest to win a major. Youngest to win two majors. Youngest to win 10 LPGA Tour events. Won the first two races of CMA Globes with its $1 million bonus. And is already in the top 40 all-time money list with over $6 million in earnings. What were you doing when you were a teenager, Carlos?
Playing in college, I guess. not ever thinking about something professional or anything like that. Trying to get through life.
You didn't earn $6 million when you were a teenager?
No. I was close in my dreams. But,
well, I did too. I might have earned $1,000. But I spent $2,000.
That's it, but no, Lydia Ko, incredible. And to add a little bit to Martin and Jarena Piller, I mean, they have this competition to see which one is the first to win on the big tour. Of course, Martin has won five times on the web.com. Jarena has not won yet, but they have this bet to see who's the one who's going to be the first one to win. The other one's going to have to cook all the time. And they were saying that the caddy from Jarena was keeping her posted on what was going with Martin, and maybe that's what kept her from winning, because she said she had out of concentration. So even though that she finished a D3, wow, incredible. But she's close. Both are close to winning, and I just want to see who's going to be the first one to win it. So we'll see. Hey, let's talk a little bit about the European Tour now, where Su Ming Lee has won the Shenzhen International. That after he shot a final round of 3 and he won. It's the South Korean's maiden European Tour title in what was only his sixth start. The 22-year-old finished on 16 under par, too clear of Hoos Leuten and Brandon Stone. Lee Slattery finished T4th on 13 under par alongside Alex Leary and two Thailand Classic winner Scott Hind. In a weather-delayed tournament, the final holes were played early yesterday, Monday, where the leading players had to complete their rounds. Lee came into the day tied for the lead with five holes remaining and birdied 16th before an eagle on the par 5 17th. Some will remember Su Ming Lee for double bogeying two of his final three holes to finish T2nd at the Maybank Malaysian Open. But hey, get used to him. He may be around for a while. He's just 22, like I mentioned before. He's an incredible talent, and the experience he has now gained from winning was huge, especially after that, what happened in Malaysia. I mean, this is a great experience for him. Through 52 holes, he had 17 birdies and 35 pars. That's some golf, okay? He will move up to around 75th in the official world golf rankings from 128th. So, Su Ming Lee, remember him, Hoos Leuten has finished second now 2 weeks in a row on the European Tour. So, the Dutchman right now looks to be finding his best form. This is a player that's been, a lot has been expected from him after his great Challenge Tour career. He posted a 66 and 268, but his third round of 72 looked to have cost him, expecting to pick a W pretty soon. Alexander Leary, he looks another one who will win soon. The Frenchman was tied for the lead at 14 under par going into Monday with just a handful of holes remaining, but he played rag 9 and one over par with just one bogey and eight pars to finish three back in the tie for fourth. He also held the lead last week at the R1 at the round one of the Open de España. And finally, hey, Bubba Watson. Yes, he was playing over there. He pleased spectators with a final round of 66. He moved up 24 spots on the final day for a T8 finish, where he played the final 10 holes in 5 under par. That's Bubba being Bubba. The world number 4 had a poor opening 3 days with the flat sticks, having 36 putts in one round and 33 in round 2 and 3. Fred, however, he turned that around with 28 putts on Sunday, so maybe finally he's turning back his game, so soon we will be seeing him contending again.
Hey, you know, also from the European Tour, Rory McIlroy committed this week to play in the French Open. And as you know, that's the same week as the WGC Bridgestone. So evidently, Rory is atoning for missing so much of the year last year on the European Tour because of that soccer injury. And probably part of his deal to get instated, to get the exemption to be in the final series there on the European Tour last year, which he ended up winning. And remember, Keith Pelley designated the French Open as counting double to meet the European Tour's number of events to keep your card this year. So Rory's going to play in France and not in Akron. Champions Tour had a little event down at the down at Branson. Michael Allen sank an 18-foot birdie putt on the final hole to help he and his partner, Woody Austin, win the Bass Pro Shops Legends of Golf at Cedar Lodge. He was the only player in the final group to hit the green, although David Frost nearly chipped in for a birdie at the last that would force a playoff. Carlos, as you know, much of this event is played on the par 3 top of the rock designed by Jack Nicklaus, and it's just a lot of fun to watch. The guys at the greens are putting for birdies on every hole. It's a two-man game. The Legends is the event that started the Champions Tour way back in 1978. It's moved around the country to various courses and has had different sponsors, but has remained a two-man format that is really fun to watch. The par 3 aspect, I think, makes it exciting. Two shots of birdie virtually every hole, scoring's low, and the teams are grinding on the short course. Frost and Roger Chapman finished runner-up, with defending champs Joe Durant and Billy Andrade taking third. For Woody Austin, it was his third win on the 2016 Champions Tour, and he currently leads the Charles Schwab Cup race. They had a little tournament on the Web.com Tour. Wesley Bryan, who was one half of the famous Bryan Brothers trick shot team, got his second win on the Web.com Tour at the El Bosque Mexico Championship. With a win, he moves to number one on the money list and is virtually assured of earning one of the 25 PGA Tour cards for 2017. Bryan has recorded four top 10 finishes and six starts, including the two titles. As the hottest player on the Web.com Tour, he will get some starts on the PGA Tour, and with one more win on the junior circuit, would earn a full exemption to the big tour. Carlos?
That's right. One more, and he won't be able to play there anymore. Oh, he won't play anymore on the junior tour, but hey, best of luck to him. He's a great talent. We're going to take our first short break right now, and when we come back, we have the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And now it's time for the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Networks. And Fred, you're going to take the tee shot and you're going to be talking to us about a Tiger sighting. So what is going on with Tiger? Is he finally going to play? I mean, I heard something about the U.S. Open. What's going on?
You know, there was a lot of news this week about Tiger. There was some video that popped up on Facebook from a clinic he was involved in. It looks like he was swinging about 75% with the driver, but was taking full swings. He only played five holes, but, you know, it did appear that he could play a little bit. Tim Rosevoort says he would not be surprised to see Tiger at Charlotte for the Wells Fargo, and Nota Begay said Tiger is in the back half of his progression in his rebound from the three back surgeries, and it seems clear that Woods is far closer to his next tour start than his last one 9 months ago at the Wyndham Championship. Tiger's appearance in the Wells Fargo next week may still be a mystery, but it is a certainty that he has entered the U.S. Open to be held in just 7 weeks. He would want at least a few reps before Oakmont, wouldn't you think? The Players' Championship is in 2 weeks, May 12th through the 15th, and the Memorial at Muirfield Village that he has won five times is in 5 weeks, June 2nd through the 5th, and 2 weeks prior to the U.S. Open held June 16th through the 19th. Also circulating last week was a piece written by Wright Thompson for ESPN entitled The Secret History of Tiger Woods, which gives a rare glimpse into the private life of Tiger and the effect the loss of his father Earl Woods had on him. Really quite insightful. I read the whole article. It's really a good read. I would urge everyone to look that up and give it a read. The bottom line on all of this is this. Tiger's getting close to returning to the PGA Tour. It's great to see. Jason Day, Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, and Ricky Fowler are performing well, but won't it be fun to see if an aging Tiger compete with the young Lions?
I am anxious to see that. And he did register for the U.S. Open, which means at least that if he is going to play, at least he's already registered. But I think if he's going to do it, I don't think he's going to return for the Wells Fargo. I would say that if he would return somewhere to get some reps before that, I would go for somewhere there, very near to you there for the Memorial, where he just can play that course with one hand and play it well. So hopefully we can see him back soon. I think, I don't know, it's just my opinion that he might be shooting for the Memorial to get ready for the U.S. Open. So we'll see. We'll see how about that. But hopefully he can get back and in good shape and good form, because otherwise, hey, stay back and don't play until you're finally fit. Hey, some news about the Olympics and golf. And first, it was Vijay Singh, who said he was not going to play in the Olympics for his native Fiji, saying he was worried about contracting the Zika virus. Okay, then came Adam Scott, two-time winner in 2016 and the number seven player in the world. He said he would not play for Australia during the Summer Games in Brazil. day later, Louis Oosthuizen of South Africa said he was keeping the Olympics competition as well. Three former major champions, three players who were locked to represent their countries on two-man teams. Jack Nicklaus Ollenberg, referring specifically to Scott's decision, called it sad for both the Olympics and golf. Scott cited an extremely busy playing schedule plus personal and professional commitments as the reasons for his decision. While all that sounds plausible, Scott showed why golf shouldn't be an Olympic sport, at least not an Olympic sport for professional golfers. That's what he said. By its very own standards, an Olympic gold medal should be the highest honor there is to win in a chosen sport, especially an individual sport such as golf. But that's not the case for PGA Tour players. I mean, they would rather win one of the majors, the Masters, U.S. Open, British Open, or PGA, and probably the Ryder Cup than an Olympic medal. That's how they've been shown, and none of this is to blame Scott, I mean, or any other ranked player who might soon follow his lead. I can understand that. After all, the PGA Tour has had to cram the World Golf Championships, Bridgestone Invitational, the British Open, and the PGA Championship into a five-week window because of the Olympics. And 2 weeks after the Olympics end, the FedEx Cup playoff begins. So 2 weeks after those are done, the Ryder Cup will be contested. No wonder Scott wants to make sure he's ready for the majors. I mean, yeah, he will need some rest, of course. I mean, golf is just making its return to the Olympics for the first time since 1904. And I understand the claim about the format not being team-oriented. I mean, I get it, but look at tennis and other sports like this. I mean, they play an individual format. They don't complain. After all, they're individuals, and if you come to think about it, you're representing your country. All those same pro players that go on a very busy schedule as well, and they take some time to represent their countries, not themselves. I mean, no, in the Ryder Cup and President Cup, the only players that are representing their country are the Americans. In the Ryder Cup, it's Europe they're representing. In the President's Cup, it's the rest of the world. So don't come and say that it's that they are also representing the country there. So don't use that as an excuse. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if more players decide it's not a big deal and do the same, but that is just being selfish. Thank God, number one, Jordan Spieth and some of the other top players don't think that way. I really hope that golf can return in 2020 and it starts getting the track that it should, the history in the Olympics, so that they realize what really means, since that is the only way, this is the only way the game will be truly massified around the world. Golf needs the Olympics, it's not the other way around. But I guess, I mean, to the selfish individuals that bypass the event, it's the other way around. It's their first and not the Olympics first.
Yeah, I know. You and I go back and forth on this, Carlos, and you know, I'm not a big golf in the Olympics. I love the Olympics, don't get me wrong, love it, but I just don't think it needs golf. Golf shouldn't be there. Yeah, Charles Schwartzel has also said he's not going to play either, so, you know, I guess that opens the door for Brendan Grace and somebody else from down there in South Africa, but maybe Garrett Player will strap him back up, maybe. but I don't know. I don't get it. I'm sorry. More power to them. I don't care who goes, who doesn't, because the field's going to be stupid anyhow. It's not going to work. We'll see. Hey, continuing about Olympics, though, because of the Olympics, the drug policy on the PGA Tour has come into question, and we talked about this before. The April 21st Scotsman ran a story about illegal drug use in golf comments made by the former president of the World Anti-Doping Association, or WADA, Dick Pound. He is very familiar with the illegal use of steroids and the effect they can have in the world of sports. WADA has long been the keeper of the records of athletes' drug tests and is the official drug tester for the Olympics. Pound was in Scotland recently and lectured at Stirling University about illegal drug usage in sport. He remains confident it is a fight that can be won, but insists that even more rigorous testing is needed. While governing bodies and sponsors need to take their heads out of the sand, and more whistleblowers need to come forward. He has pointed an accusing finger at golf and claimed that drugs cheats are rife in all sports. WADA is for all public exposure of cheats, and the PGA Tour is all about secrecy and intrigue. Tim Fincham and Mr. Pound have never seen eye to eye on the subject, and for Fincham, exposing illegal drug usage on the PGA Tour would be counterproductive to portraying the image of fine, upstanding men of good character hitting golf balls 400 yards and beginning to look like WWE wrestlers with their shirts off. Pound is quoted, "We have all seen the shape changes in golfers and the distances they are hitting now, and we know that the equipment is better and the balls are better, but it isn't just that. The sport, which has a great reputation for calling faults on yourself, could set an example to others by outing the cheats, but the reply he received was disappointing." Pound says the leaders of the golf world, Fincham in particular, said, "Ah, but if I do that, then they are all going to think my guys are just like those baseball players and football players, and I don't want that. But if you follow some of the shape changes in golfers and follow how at a certain point, if they happen to come off them, you see how many more injuries they get. There's a problem there." Carlos, the rumors have circulated around golf for a long time about possible PED and illegal drug usage, but with the closed-door policy enforced by the PGA Tour, media are not allowed access to fine suspensions and results of periodic testing of players on tour. The Olympics has zero tolerance to usage of illegal drugs and has no problem with publicly sharing the results of their findings. Golf wanted in the Olympics, but they may be getting more than they bargained for with WADA and the Olympic drug testing policy, Carlos.
I think that's one of the issues that I think the new PGA Tour commissioner will have to deal with, it because this is not going to go away unless golf doesn't return to the Olympics. Maybe that's what they want all along. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. But this is, if golf is going to return to the Olympics, that is going to be one of the issues that is going to have to be faced, because that's ridiculous. Hey, just get it out of the way and comply with it. Hey, talking about the PGA Tour, and let's talk about a little bit about the FedEx Cup. You know, the money list is getting plenty of attention at PGA Tour headquarters this year. The Tour's policy board last month finally voted to eliminate the money list for exempt status for the following season. The top 125 have been fully exempt since 1983, and if the latest proposal is ratified at the June board meeting, only the top 125 in the FedEx Cup standings will be fully exempt after the 2016-17 season. But more work lies ahead. Andy Patzler, the chief of operations, said the tour is looking into a change in the way points are distributed at each tournament, so there's a steeper drop beyond the top 10. Since the FedEx Cup began in 2007, it has been out of sync with the money distribution. One issue with the FedEx Cup has been the perception that it rewards a middle-of-the-road performance. One player who stood out through no fault of his own was Willie McGirt in 2011. McGirt had only three finishes in the top 30 during the regular season. His best was a tie for 19th in Mexico, and he grabbed the 125th and final spot for the start of the playoffs. McGirt tied for 24th in the Barclays to advance to the next playoff event before his FedEx Cup run ended in Boston. That was before the wraparound season began, when only the 125 on the money list earned their cards. McGirt had to play four times in the fall to try to move into the top 125. He finished 141st and had to go back to the old Q school, and he made it. That's just one example. What causes the tour to look at the distribution are questions whether top finishes are properly rewarded. Here's the best money-to-points example for a $5.9 million purse. A player who finishes ninth and misses the cut would earn $171,000, while a player who had a pair of 30-place finishes would make $80,240. But if FedEx Cup points were applied, the player with a pair of 30th places finishes would have more points, that's 82, than the player who finishes 9th, 8th, which is 80, and missed the cut. I mean, for the money, the tour has operated a model in which the winner gets 18% of the purse. But assuming only 70 players made the cut in a regular PGA Tour event, 3,513 points are distributed, meaning the winner gets only 14.24%. The tour has not indicated what kind of formula it is going to look at but the goal is to be more top-heavy with the points. Other glaring example, the difference in points between finishing 5th and 7th is equal to the difference in between finishing 30th and 50th. Fred, looks like another change might be coming for the FedEx Cup, but this one, I think they have to get it because it's really not working in sync right now.
Yeah, they've been tinkering with that for some time and talking about it, and looks like they're going to make some changes. So, and probably for the best. They need to reward those higher finishes, but you know, I've always been for the consistent golfer. So the guy that can finish T25, or in the top 25 week in and week out, I think he should be rewarded. You know, the guy that pops up and gets a top 10 and then misses two or three cuts in a row, you know what? He shouldn't get you that many points. But if they're going to make him top heavy, then you know he could be the better guy. So I don't know. It's the age old conversation. Do you want to be consistent or do you want to make a lot of birdies and you don't want to be flash? So I don't know. It's, you know, Phil versus Tiger. It's, you know, it's whatever you like, I guess. Hey, Carlos, I don't know if you've been following the most excellent SB2K16 of the Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, and Smiley Kaufman on Facebook. You know, just in case you don't know what SB2K16 is, Spring Break 2016. It seems the young guys asked Rory to come along, but his fiancée, Erica Stoll, had other ideas of a more romantic nature and booked a couple's getaway to Barbados, and Rory had to beg off. One hopes Rory didn't overdo it and pull something important. Remember the soccer incident from last year. Well, anyway, Smiley Kaufman was added to replace Rory, and off the young intrepid foursome went to Baker's Bay in the Bahamas. You suppose they flew coach, or you know, what do you think they flew over there on? And it looks like a grand old time was had by all. They documented their exploits on Snapchat, sand shirts exposing their golfers' tans, and the hijinks young guys can get into on the golf course and off. I'm surprised we never saw this behavior from Ben Hogan, Sam Snead, Jack Nicklaus, or even Arnold Palmer. So my question is, Carlos, is it a good thing that the younger generation is so public about their activities? Does everyone need to know they are acting like school kids on holiday in warm and sunny paradise? Yes, they are all in their early 20s, and if they weren't doing this, they would be in Daytona, Panama City, or some other spring break town drinking and cavorting at wet t-shirt contests. The truth is, though, that these young guys now have a role to fulfill as role models for younger golfers. And yes, I was young once and had to experience life to its fullest, but I'm not sure the behavior of Messrs. Thomas, Fowler, Spieth, and Kaufman should be exposed to the social media masses, Carlos. And Carlos, that wraps up Par 5 News, presented by Golf United Golf Network, who wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available at discount. They also have an excellent opportunity with their director's program to earn commissions and discounts, set up your own pro shop, great deal. They offer instant free access to Global Affinity, which offers discounted travel. So, Carlos, visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today and check out the product discounts and their opportunity.
Hey, before we go, I just have to comment on the SB2K16. I know that Gary Player is looking for an invite to SB2K17. He posted on Twitter, I don't know if you saw it, that he posted a response with Spring Break in 1965, where he was with Jack Nicklaus out on a safari there in South Africa. So, and he said, hey, good times, how about an invite to SB2K17? So Gary Player.
Would that be a blast for those guys to have Gary Player there? Wow. Now, that is pretty cool, Carlos. That's great.
That was really, really funny. Hey, now let's take the short break. And when we come back, we have our EIG Very Important Guest of the Week, and you don't want to miss it, is former professional golfer and current TV broadcaster Johnny Miller. Don't go anywhere.
to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our very important guest, very VIG of the week. His name is Johnny Miller. He's a former professional golfer and TV broadcaster. Fred had the pleasure to talk to him. And hey, tell us a little bit about this interview.
Yeah, as you know, I attended the Legends Luncheon last week in Columbus, which precedes the Memorial Tournament by about a month. And Johnny Miller is the honoree this year for the Memorial. And he was there and agreed to talk with me just briefly. He had just finished about 30 minutes of interviews with the assembled media there and had to make a flight, so our interview is not very long, but it is very informative, and I didn't have my tape recorder running when all the horde of media was surrounding him. I should have, because he had some great sound bites in there. I should have gotten some of that, but what we have is very good. And Johnny was great to talk to us, and so maybe we'll get to talk to him some more when the tournament comes around.
Let's play.
Dr. Johnny Miller here at the Legends Lunch in Columbus, Ohio. Johnny, you're the honoree for this year's Memorial Tournament. Quite an honor for you, sir.
Yeah, it is, especially coming from Jack and Barbara, who are, I've known him for 50 years, and he's been a fan of mine, and I've been a super fan of his, and I don't know, there's like an older brother, younger brother syndrome between the two of us. I lost my older brother. He drowned fishing by the San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge, and he sort of filled that role a little bit with me, and so I really appreciate and love the guy.
The U.S. Open's going back to Oakmont. That was the site of your 63 final round to win the tournament, the U.S. Open in 1973. Mm-hmm. Bring back any memories there?
Yeah, I'm sort of defined by that round, maybe even more than winning the championship, to be honest with you. People realize it was a 63 is a great round, but to shoot 8-under, which nobody's ever shot 8-under in a U.S. Open, and to do it on the last day to win by one, that's what makes it sort of what it is on maybe the hardest course in America. So I never used to give it that much credit. I was more credit was winning the tournament, the championship. But after a while, I realized people think that's the greatest round anybody's ever shot, from the hacker all the way to the touring pro, to Jack Nicklaus, to Bobby Jones, to whoever, Ben Hogan. That's still the round that people say, yep, I think that's the greatest round.
You were always a very good iron player, and what I remember about that day was every time you hit an iron shot, it seemed like you hit it within 10 feet. Was there a particular thing that you credit you becoming a really good iron player?
Ever since I was a little kid, I just could feel where the target was, and I swung at the target. I can't tell that enough to golfers, that somehow you can envision the target and see it and then get over athletically and just swing through the fall through at the target. Of course, you have to have the face square and hit it flush, but I see guys swinging left of the target, right of the target. I mean, that day I opened up my stance. I could really see the target in my mind, restricted my backswing a little bit, but I was swinging right down the line at the target. And I think my average iron, I hit every green regulation. I think my average iron that day was about, like you said, about 12 feet from the hole 18 times, and I hit one par five and two. You know, it shot, only had 29 putts, which normally that's about a 66, but because the round was so good, tee to green, I only needed 29 putts for 63.
You were talking about Jordan Spieth's collapse on number 12 earlier, and you said he'll come back for this, he'll recover, very mentally strong. It's unusual for him to happen. Did you have a point in your career where something happened that made you a much better player like that?
That was a pretty bad collapse, all right. As far as in my career, I was pretty good with the lead. When I had the lead, I won 84% of the time, which was pretty good, the best of anyone until Tiger Woods came along. But I did have a couple little meltdowns. Once at the LA Open, I believe the last two holes to Watson, he beat me with a long putt on the playoff, but that one haunted me a little bit. And then against Jack at the 72, Bing Crosby, I shanked one on 16. we were tied for the lead. And I made a great bogey, actually, behind a tree. But then Jack three-putted the next green, and then he beat me with a long putt in the playoff. But that one haunted me. Every time I had a chance to win, I said somewhere on the back nine, you're going to shank it like you did against Jack Nicklaus, are you? It haunted me, you know. Those things haunt you, like Greg Norman. Imagine what he's – and even now, Spieth, he'll never win again without thinking about that back nine this year. So it's tough when you lose leads and you know you sort of fell apart either mentally – or, well, it's always mental, but bad thoughts or whatever. But, yeah, golf really exposes that, doesn't it?
Listen, I know you're on the hurry. I'll let you go. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. I appreciate
see
it.
See you later.
Yeah. There you have it. That was Johnny Miller. And very insightful, that thing about the him playing on the lead and his thoughts. And Jordan Spieth, I think that's going to be the talk for the rest of the year. And, hopefully, really, you can get him back when he's in the memorial so we can get some more sound bites from him.
Yeah, he's so interesting to talk to. He was there for quite a while, and guys were just ganged around him, you know, and I refused to get into those scrums with those media guys. So I maybe didn't get as long of interview, you know, because I was kind of at the tail end of everything. But you know what? It was really good information. It was great talking to him. And it's so real being there, Carlos, for me. Here I am, you know, when we're done talking, as he's saying thank you very much, Barbara Nicklaus was standing right beside of us, and he was saying thank you to Barbara, and, you know, as we signed off, you know, he was hurrying out of there and giving her a hug. Jack was standing there. It's so surreal to be in those situations. It's just it's a lot of fun.
Well, all right. We'll wrap up our VIG, very important guest of the week, with Johnny Miller. We're going to go right away now to our practice range where it's going to be taped. We were with Dave Hackenberg from the Toledo Blade, longtime sports and golf writer and former president of the Golf Writers Association of America. We discussed there, expanded on a recent article he had wrote last Wednesday about the different eras in golf. And Fred, anything you want to add to it before we go right to it?
No, just the fact that Dave and I have become friends over the years, and he's a great sports writer here for the Toledo Blade, covers all the sports. His first love is golf. It shows, and he covered golf for a long, long time and has a tremendous history in the game. And he did write a wonderful column about the current depth of the PGA Tour. And we've had various discussions over the years, and I've always said I wanted to try and get him on the show, and we never were able to make it happen, but we finally got it done this week. So I was happy to get this, Carlos. It runs about 20 minutes. It's a little bit longer maybe than we normally do, but we cover a lot of great information in there. Plus, the whole interview actually went about 40 minutes, and we went off in another direction with the latter part of it. So I have saved that, and hopefully here in a couple of weeks when we get closer to a major, because we talk about the major tournaments and their ranking, and we'll try and play that sometime down the road too with Dave.
That's great.
Hi, and now it's time for our VIG of the Week, our very important guest of the week. His name is Dave Hackenberg, who has been the longtime sports columnist for the Toledo Blade. Dave has covered golf for over 30 years now and attended over 20 Masters. He's been lucky in his distinguished career. He's also past president of the Golf Writers Association of America. Dave, it is a pleasure to have you here on the Back Nine Report today. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, and it's nice to be with you, Carlos. Thank you very much.
Dave, great to have you finally on the show. I know we've talked about doing this a couple times. We read your columns all the time here in the Toledo Blade and always enjoy them. And so really happy that you could get on here and talk to us a little bit. Give us the benefit of some of your immense knowledge in the golf world.
Well, that should take about 5 minutes, Fred.
Hey, Dave, you wrote a column in the Blade on Wednesday, April 20th, that addressed the attempts of some to compare eras in golf and suggest that today's golfers are by far superior to past eras. Can you tell us a little bit about what it's about?
Well, I guess the impetus, and it's nothing really new, but it was sort of rejuvenated after Danny Willett's won the Masters. I was reading one of those email golf sites, check in all the time, and I've been racking my brain to find it and see who the quote was from, but it was, and I can't find it, but it was one of the today's players who made the comment, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said basically that this proves depth of talent and the rich vein of talent on the tour today. Anybody can pop up and win majors, and stop and consider that the guy who is for a number of years now been considered the best of all of us isn't even playing. It just shows you the level of talent on the PGA Tour and internationally today is greater than it's ever been. And again, I'm paraphrasing. That wasn't his direct quote, but that's basically what the person said. And it's sort of the same tenor that came up back when Tiger was winning everything in sight, and we were doing that almost weekly debate, Tiger versus Jack, who's the greatest golfer of all time. And I didn't necessarily agree with it then, although I'll give you some thoughts on more current golf when we get to that, but I didn't necessarily agree with it then, and I don't necessarily agree with it now. So the purpose of the column was basically not comparing Jack and Tiger so much as using them as the examples based on era, and trying to show that, yeah, today's talent's incredible, but back when Jack was playing, it wasn't exactly a dumpster fire. There was a load of good players out there that he had to deal with every week and in every major. To consider otherwise is just silly.
Yeah, Dave, you're right on point. We had this discussion. We talk about this quite a bit and see it in the news. And what you're referring to is Jason Duffner put some tweets out referring to kind of the snub of the TV media when Jim Herman was winning in Houston a couple weeks ago. They were belying the fact that here's a nobody, Jim Herman jumps up and wins a tournament, and Duffner kind of went to his aid and said, hey, you guys gave this guy no chance. He's as good as anybody. He's been out here doing it for a long time, and it just proves how deep the fields really are.
Right. So I think you're right. It was Duffner. You're right.
I've kind of gone back, and I have talked a lot about history and golf, and I know you've written a book about the history and golf here in Toledo and some different things, and you've watched golf for a long, long time. To me, there's been kind of four eras in golf. You've got Jones, Walter Hagen, and Gene Sarazen, who from 1923 to 1930 pretty much won, well, really in 10 years, 1921 to 1930, between Jones, Herrick, and Sarazen, they won 18 of the 33 professional majors, and then Jones won another six amateurs on top of that. You got that era. Then you went to Hogan, Snead, and Nelson, who won like five of six Masters in a row, and they won 16 of 40 majors in the 40s and 50, late 40s, early 50s. Then you went to the Nicklaus, Palmer, Player area, who, again, one of those three won 8 of 9 Masters in a row, and they won a bunch of majors. And then you went to Woods. And it seems like, doesn't it, Dave, that current people that follow golf don't believe that there was hardly any golf before 1997. It's like golf started at that time, you know, yeah, when Tiger came to the tour. Do you find that?
Yeah, and I agree with you. And to sort of precede that or set the base for that, nobody has more respect for what Tiger Woods did than you and I. So his record's incredible. His winning percentage and the number of tournaments he's played in is an all-time PGA Tour record. His 14 majors over a fairly concentrated period were tremendous, and some of them were lapping the field. Can't overstate what he did, what he's accomplished, and what he might yet accomplish if he can ever get healthy enough to get back out there and get his game put back together and get confident again. I don't think he's done winning. I'm not sure if he's going to get four majors to catch Jack. I think that's, at this point, probably unlikely. I don't underestimate anything he's done or anything he might yet do, because he is that good and that talented, that focused, and, you know, has the blinders on for nothing but success. No disrespect at all for Tiger Woods, but you go back to those earlier eras, you know, Bobby Jones, I still think, in a way, and this may be sacrilegious to say it, I still think in a way that his major championship numbers are maybe a little bit inflated, because back then the U.S. and British amateurs were considered major championships. And you go back and look at those tournaments, and in all honesty, he's playing a bunch of guys named Nigel and Lionel, people that nobody had heard of then and you certainly haven't heard of now. It's not to question that they were good golfers, but he was head and shoulders above that level of competition, and those counted as major championships. But when you consider Gene Sarazen, Walter Hagen, and the rest of the professional crew at that time, while probably not as deep then as later, that's certainly tremendous accomplishments for those guys to have dominated that era. And then you move ahead to Hogan, Nelson, Snead, and, you know, for all that Tiger Woods has done and Jack Nicklaus and so many others have done, nobody's ever won more tournaments than Sam Snead. No one has been a more driven competitor than Ben Hogan, more relentless in his quest for the perfect swing, the perfect shot-making than Hogan. And Byron Nelson was just maybe one of the five greatest guys that's ever walked on this earth. He was tremendously talented, humble, friendly. He was Arnold before Arnold as far as spreading the gospel of what and how this game should be and is, making it popular to the everyman. Certainly here in Toledo, you know, we're running out of people who have those ties to him, but he spent 5 years here back in the early 1940s as the head pro at Inverness Club, back when it was not unusual for the top tour pros to work club jobs at the same time they were playing golf. And maybe one of the great stories from Inverness Club here in Toledo is that when they were looking for a new professional back in right around 1940, I believe, the two finalists, they did their final interviews, and the president of the club sat down to write a letter to the runner-up explaining to him, gone the other route, and we're going to hire Byron Nelson. And that letter started, "Dear Mr. Hogan." So those were the two finalists for the Inverness professional job. So it has some deep roots here in Toledo. So that era was tremendous. And then, as you said, you move ahead to Jack Arnold and the Globetrotter, Gary Player, and that's where it really expanded and got deep and talented, and I think the game grew from there.
Dave, you mentioned a point there that, you know, when we talk about eras here, though, we're talking about three guys, Jones, Hagen, Sarazen. We're talking about Hogan, Snead, and Nelson. We're talking about Nicklaus, Palmer, and Player. But when we talk about Woods, it's Woods' era. I mean, yeah, we had, you know, there was Phil Mickelson. There was Furyk. There was Love, Kite, Azinger, Stricker, you know, a little bit of Greg Norman in there maybe. But it was all Woods. Nobody really came up to be a real challenge to him like these other guys, two or three guys that dominated an era. In Woods, from 1997, from the time he won that first Masters up until 2008 when he won his last U.S. Open, when he was playing and not off injured or being getting a surgery or, you know, recuperating from sex addiction or whatever, he was winning majors, he was winning tournaments, and nobody was even close to him.
You're absolutely right. I the names that stand out in there, as you said, Mickelson, Duval, Sergio, Ernie Els, Lehman, Stricker, Davis Love III. But you're right. They were, I don't want to use the term bit players because that's not fair to them. They were winning their share. Nobody was challenging Tiger Woods' dominance, not only his dominance in winning, but by how much he was winning and how easily he was winning and the scores he was putting up, the shots he was making. The greatest thing about Tiger, in my opinion, outside of his putting, was his second shots when the driver wasn't exactly straight. He was Seve Ballesteros in the rough and in the woods and in the pine straw. He created shots that nobody else saw. Pulled them off, and they were amazing. You're right. It was probably no longer is, but for close to two decades, was a one-man era, and that's a very good point.
Let's fast forward just a little bit, and we've got some new young guys that are kind of taking center stage. And, Carlos, I think you had a question about that.
Yeah, perfectly. Right now, as you know, we have Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Rory McIlroy, and Ricky Fowler. Especially Spieth, Day, and McIlroy, they have won four of the last majors. Spieth, in his last five, he has gone win, fourth, second, and second. Rory McIlroy might be, maybe right now, the most talented. When he's on, nobody's like him. What's your take on this new young crop?
Well, you just hit the nail on the head, Carlos. It's certainly very talented and very deep, and at the top are those three guys you named, and they're not going to win every week. They're not perfect, but, man, they are loaded. And the thing about Spieth that surprised me at Augusta was not that he ran into trouble, but is where he did it. You know, you could tell on the 10th tee and the 11th tee that he was losing the feel for the driver. He was wide right, and it just wasn't, he wasn't comfortable. You could tell. Whether that was pressure, I don't think so, because, you know, after the previous year's Masters and the U.S. Open out west, and he's tasted and been tested by all the pressure he needed to be. But just was something wrong with the swing, something wrong with the feel he had for the club or whatever. So if you had told me that when he got to number 13 or 14 that something bad was going to happen, it wouldn't have shocked me. That it happened at number 12 with an iron in his hand, that did shock me. I didn't expect it to happen there. And that sort of opened, you know, more than opened the door for Willett. And Jason Day didn't have the kind of Sunday he needed to have to be in that position, and neither did Rory. But those three guys are going to win a lot. They're all focused. They're all in great physical condition. They're all stronger than oxes. They all have complementary aspect of the game that, if something isn't truly going right, that there's other things they can draw on. They're all good putters. It is tremendous to pile on some of the other guys that are coming on the scene right now. And whether you've heard of them or not, whether they are household names or not, you know, Duffner is right from that aspect. Anybody can step up and win any week. But those three guys are going to have their say about it without question.
You wrap up your article in the same way, saying that exact fact, that even though we do have some dominant players in every era or every time frame does have one, two, three dominant players, it's still a fact, and especially, I think, even more so today. You know, Jack Nicklaus used to make the point that when he went to the Masters, he knew he only had to be about 30 guys. Because the field was limited to 70 or 80. A bunch of those were amateurs. A bunch of those were guys not having a good week. Some of them were there. They were having trouble with the wife. They were, you know, didn't like the food. They were didn't like the weather that week or whatever. So you can eliminate, you know, more than half the field. But even today, You can't, when you walk into a PGA Championship, a Players Championship, a U.S. Open, you can't really eliminate anybody. Those guys can all play, and if they happen to see a couple putts go down or hit a couple really crisp iron shots and get them going for the week, anybody in the top 500 in the world could win at any time.
It's hard to dispute that, although I would say that anybody that goes to Augusta and doesn't like the food and the weather just ain't going to be happy anywhere.
I'll tell you what, I had a friend of mine once who was a young pro, and he had just gotten his card, and he was under sponsorship to Titleist, and so they had him doing a bunch of stuff. They were doing a bunch of club testing, and they had him doing some appearances and doing some stuff, and he was traveling around, and he had to play golf here, he had to play golf there, and honest to goodness, he was going to his first Masters, and he said, we were getting ready to turn down Magnolia Lane, he said, and I was wishing I was anyplace else but instead of going to play golf somewhere. I mean, that puts you in the mindset of some of these guys, though, you know, Dave. I mean, you know that. I mean, they run over the world. But some days they just don't feel like playing. It's just like some days you don't feel like going into the blade.
You know, only about 6 days a week, yeah. the thing that we sometimes forget, and by we, I mean the average fan, these guys are professional golfers. This is their living. They're making money. They're not being, yes, they want to compete. Yes, they want to win. And at some point in their careers, the money probably stops being the factor. The last 7-8 years, Jack Nicklaus was playing golf. He didn't care what it said on the check. Tiger might not even cash him anymore. I have no idea. But there's more to life than walking up to the first tee and putting a peg in the ground. There's all kinds of responsibilities, there's all kinds of intrusions, there's the outings, the corporate stuff, the sponsor stuff, it goes on. And I can see the point of view where a guy would say, I just don't want to play this week. I want to go lay on the beach and throw my line in the water and, you know, play with my kids. But I'm not sure that should happen as you're turning into Magnolia Lane ever, but I understand the point, you know, very well, and sometimes we forget everything that these guys are going through and the fact that they're independent contracts, sponsorship money out there and that type of thing that's guaranteed to them to a certain degree, but it's not like a Major League Baseball player that gets a 5-year, $30 million contract is set for 5 years and $30 million. You got to go produce every week, make a living, and there's going to be good weeks and bad weeks. And we sort of lose sight of that, I guess. But at the same time, I think when you especially get the major championships, these guys draw on something a little extra. Whether you're talking about the U.S. Open, the PGA Championship, you see all of that sort of go out the window, and the competitive juices and the desire to win and the desire to make a name for yourself and go down in history rises up, and that can be the number one golfer in the world, the number 100 golfer in the world, or the number 300 golfer in the world when they get that opportunity. And it's like you say, couple putts go down and all of a sudden that hole gets real big and everything changes and your life can change in 4 days.
Well, thank you, David, so much for taking time to talk to us today. We really appreciate it. We'll try and get you back again and we'll talk. We'll get another issue for you to enlighten us on. How about that?
I'd love to. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Our pleasure, Dave. Thank you. Thank you for being with us.
There you have it. That was Dave Hackenberg from the Toledo Blade. Fred, I didn't realize we talked that much with him, but there's still more, and I exhort everybody to wait for that rest because it's about the majors and how where we rank them and our thoughts on it. So it's gonna be good, just like what you just heard.
Yeah, I didn't realize it that long either until I went to edit it, and it just kept going and going and going. Oh man, Carlos is not going to like this. It's going to be too long. So I did edit it back a little bit. It went a little bit longer than we normally do, but Dave just is a wealth of knowledge, and he's so much fun to talk to, and really good stuff in there.
Very, very good. Hey, you have to wait for the rest, but hey, so hopefully we'll have it for the U.S. Open. Let's now go right to the final putts. I mean, I'm going to start right away with talking about Jordan Spieth. You know, he may have missed his chance for consecutive titles at the Masters this month, but the former Longhorn has just added another feather to his cap. He's been named one of Time's 100 most influential people for 2016. Spieth's entry on the list, penned by Dallas Cowboys quarterback Tony Romo, says the golfer, and I quote, exemplifies everything that's great about sport. Jordan possesses rare competitive greatness that he somehow shuts off when the setting calls for it. And his graciousness toward others is genuine and real. He's the standard by which our heroes should be measured, end of quote. Spieth now joins a diverse 2016 list that includes fellow athletes Stephen Carey, Ronda Rousey, and Lewis Hamilton. Among many others, he's listed in the icons category of the list. So congratulations goes to him. I am sure he will become a staple of this kind of list, and especially this one. So another accomplishment more for Jordan Spieth. And hey, talking about collapses earlier about Jordan, right? Well, John Vandeveld will return
Who?
To the scene.
Who?
John Vandeveld. He will return to the
There's
scene.
There's a blast from the past.
Yeah, 16 years to be exact. He will return to the scene of what is known now as one of the sport's most notorious meltdowns, and he makes his debut in July's Senior Open at Carnoustie. The Frenchman, who now lives in Hong Kong and reaches the qualification of 50 in May, famously squandered what you might remember was a three-shot lead at the final hole of the 1999 Open. He teed off on the 18th, knowing that even a double bogey six would result in him lifting the claret jug. We all know what it ensued there. Oh, my God. I'm not even going to go into it. But, hey, he insists he doesn't mind people reminding him of what happened and is looking forward to playing the Angus Links again, and says he has come to peace a long time ago with that. So, Fred, let me tell you, many people will be also looking forward to seeing his return.
I still can't watch that, Carlos. I cannot. That's just even thinking about it makes me ill, actually. So, hey, President Obama was in jolly old England last week for a speech and met with the British Prime Minister, David Cameron, on the golf course. They played the Grove in Hertfordshire, and England's PM said he was pleased to have parred the very first hole and only lost one ball. So don't know what they chatted about, but they had a good time beating it around over in London. The Golf Channel has embraced the PGA's National Day of Instruction on May 4th and will provide a full day of instructional programming. Michael Breed, Martin Hall, Hank Haney, Cameron McCormick, Stan Lutley, and David Ledbetter will all have feature spots throughout the day. Set your DVR on May 4th to the Golf Channel and get yourself a whole bunch of free golf lessons, Carlos. If you don't feel that $500 is quite enough to spend for a single golf club, Titleist is entering the high-end golf club market made popular by PXG and their $7,000 set of golf clubs. So a C16, they're going to call the C line. So the C16 driver from Titleist will start at $1,000. While the C16 irons start at $2,700. The clubs will be strictly limited at just 1,500 drivers and 1,000 set of irons. In addition, interested buyers can only purchase the clubs after a club fitting at Titleist California or Massachusetts headquarters, or by visiting one of the more than 80 locations where fitting events will be held every Thursday for the next 2 months. Carlos, if you want me to, I'll be happy to give you the locations where you can go get fitted for the new set. You know, and for only $5,000, you can have a new set of clubs, bag not included, Carlos.
Oh, man, the least they could do is include the bag. No, I'm not going. Now I'm not going. I was going to, but not anymore.
That did it.
That did it. That did it. Well, Black Niners, that wraps up another week of the Batman Report presented by eDraft.com. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, former professional golfer and current TV broadcaster Johnny Miller. Also to Dave Hackenberg from the Toledo Blade for joining us on the practice range. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres. I'm with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.